Hey there, this is Pastor Stu, and I just wanted to personally thank you for being part of our church online. We hope these podcasts have been an encouragement and challenge to you, and we further hope this podcasting will complement your involvement in the local church as you give, serve, love, and are accountable to a church family wherever you are. If you want any more information about Encounter or how to get involved here, please click on the contact link or the giving link if you'd like to get involved in that way. Now let's get into the Word together.
Pretty sweet. It even has a place for me, theoretically, to hold my snacks, because I snack a lot when I'm preaching. Thank you guys for making this week. I've got a new podium, for those of you who aren't familiar. I think I could even, it's pretty sturdy. So I can really pound the pulpit for you guys. If you guys open your Bibles to James chapter 1, that would be great. Very cool. Thank you again for doing this. This is pretty cool. As you're turning there, I do want to ask how many of you guys can relate with me. When you were younger, how many of y'all remember, living on your bicycle? I was a child of the 80s, and literally everywhere I went was on my bike. I think I have a picture of me on my bike. This is me and the group that I would hang out with, and everywhere I would go, I was through my neighborhood. We would ride our bikes everywhere. We'd ride to everyone's houses, and we'd go play sports over here. Then we'd go to someone else's house and goof off and play the Atari. Yep. Some of the other Nintendos, I guess, were big towards the later part of my childhood. And but one of the places that we'd go is we'd always go in the back of the neighborhood where there now is an entirely new neighborhood. But when I was growing up, there was some bike, like a BMX track, and we would ride our bikes over there. And we thought we were pretty cool because we could, do little jumps and try to do fancy things. And I thought I was pretty good at it, but one day I wasn't so good at it. I was jumping, and I landed kind of on my side, kind of hurt my leg a little bit. But more important than that, because my leg would heal, my bike was messed up. And so we had a little problem because the bike was messed up. And what happened was the pedal kind of fell off and completely snapped off. You can see right here what a bicycle pedal looks like. You see the little stem that's coming out? That stem completely snapped off as well. So I had nothing to put my left foot on when I was trying to get home. Well, so the way things worked, for those of you youngsters here, the way that things worked back then, I had to be home by the time it got dark. They couldn't tell me, dad would occasionally yell, and you could hear that for a few blocks away. But we were a mile and a half, 2 miles from home at this point. It's starting to get dark. I need to get home. My friends that were with me, Hunter Strop and Derek Stewart, so they're all with us, and we're all trying to make our way home. And I'm trying to get home, and I'm having a hard time. Dude, we got to go. We're going to get grounded if we're late. So they left me. Good friends. It's a good friendship. 1980s friendships. So I could probably get a hold of them on Facebook right now. I'll talk to them about this. But so they're going home. They left me. I'm trying to get home. And if you ever tried to pedal a bike with only one pedal, doesn't work real well. I mean, yeah, today, I didn't have one of them fancy schmancy ones where you can put a strap on your right pedal and you can get the ups and the downs. I didn't have that. I had no stem, no pedal or everything. And so I'm trying to get home, and I'm pushing it down. And then I'm how do I do this? And so I use my heel and try to kick it up a little bit. My heel was all bloodied up, was all hurting. So finally, after a little while, I'm this isn't going to work. So I hop to the one side and put my left leg on the right pedal and just kind of hold it down and then use my foot to kind of, I don't know what I was thinking, but it tried. And eventually, I think I walked the bike the last mile home. And I got home tired, frustrated, worn out. My mom was worried sick, you know how it is. And I got home, and I was so frustrated, but I was grumpy, I was scraped up, I didn't like my bike ride home, and I was disappointed with bike. I'm disappointed with bike because bike was not working the way bike was supposed to work. And the reason I'm bringing this up today is because I shouldn't have been disappointed with bike because I wasn't using bike properly, and that's why it broke. And when it broke, I wasn't able to use bike properly, and I didn't get the true function that bike was intended to provide me. And I think this morning as we go through here, what I want you to see is that bikes are made to be pushed one pedal and then the other pedal, and then one pedal and then the other pedal. And if you do one pedal and then try to figure out how to get the pedal back to where it's supposed to be, one pedal, try to get the pedal back to where it's supposed to be, one pedal, you're going to have a problem with bike. I think a lot of us in our lives, we have trouble with bike and we blame bike when really we've got user error. And the reason I'm bringing this up is James this morning, what he's going to talk about is he's going to talk about the importance of right side, left side living. He's going to talk about the importance of doing one thing and then doing the other thing and doing them consecutively that you might get more out of life. And sometimes what happens is we're disappointed in God, but it's really not God who's the problem. We have a lot of user error. And just as with the bike, you have to do right pedal, left pedal, right pedal, left pedal, what James is going to talk about this morning is he's going to talk about the importance of do the word, hear the word, know the word, do the word, know the word, do the word, know the word, do the word. And if you just know the word and then know the word more and then know the word a little bit more, something's going to happen in the life that you have and the brain that you have where you can have a warped understanding of faith, of Christianity, and of God. Or if you go on the other side and just do the word, do the word, do the word, you're going to be so busy doing things that eventually it's not really the word that you're doing. It's kind of you that you're doing. And you're really good at certain things, but you're not really doing what God has for you. And we must be good at knowing the word, doing the word, knowing the word, doing the word, or we're going to have some issues. Now, I'm kind of the background. I grew up in a in the church background that I had, where no word, know the word, know the word, know the word. And that's what I grew up doing. And I could, you know, I remember when I was in college and I was able to, I was in like a, I went to church every Sunday morning, and then Mondays I had my college ministry that I would go to, and Louis Giglio led that, so I loved that. And I would go every night and get more know the word from Louis, which was awesome. And then every Tuesday, I would meet with my discipler. Chris would take me through. We were involved in this group called Navigators. It's a college ministry. And I would meet with him, and he would help me know the word, know the word, know the word. And then Wednesday, I had some Bible memory that I had to get done in order to stick up with Navigators. And so I'd know the word, know the word, know the word on Wednesday, and I'd get the Bible memory done. And then I'd have to give it back to him on Thursday. And so it was more. And what ended up happening was I was great at arguing theology. I was great at knowing the Bible. I had a disciplined prayer life. But I noticed that I had some problems with God because I would read through some of the parables, for example. And I would read the parable about the prodigal son, and I was never the prodigal. I was the older brother. And the older brother was frustrated at the younger brother because he took all the possessions, he wasted them, and he came back and got a party. And the older brother's like, how come I never got a party? And that was me. There was other parables that the guys that worked all day long, and then some guys came the last hour, and the person that was paying them gave them the same amount. And I always looked at that parable, I'm like, that's not really fair, is it? Because these guys worked a lot harder, and this is, and I recognized that some of the people that were not, that were attracted to Jesus were not attracted to me. And I recognized that I looked at people differently, and I wondered why. I wondered why those attracted to Jesus weren't attracted to me. Some of you, let's be honest, you're naturally like this, right? Right now, you've got out your on your device, you've got some cross-checking of the Greek, and you've figured out, okay, we're in James, let's get out my commentary and all these sorts of things. And I think that some of you right now, you know you're supposed to make disciples, you've memorized a lot of scripture, but you're thinking of right now who should hear this message rather than actually letting it penetrate you and rather than recognizing how you obey. You know the word people. And that's kind of my background. That's what I'm naturally good at. Know the word, know the word, know the word. And others of you, you get frustrated with people like me. You get frustrated with, you know, the self-righteous nature, the arrogant nature that we have. And I was talking with a friend of mine recently. He has multiple doctorates, and One of them is a theology doctorate, and he doesn't really believe the Bible, though, a whole lot. And I was wrestling with that concept, and so I began talking to him. Wait, let's talk about this. You don't believe in the literal, Jesus is literally the Son of God, virgin birth, a lot of the foundations of faith. And he's like, well, no, we'll see. Yeah, I mean, we kind of believe in those things. Do you hold the Bible highly? And he's like, not well. I mean, yeah, we believe in the Bible. Well, then this statement here in the Bible you apparently disagree with. How do you deal with that? And he said, our church has decided that the highest virtue is love, and everything we do comes through this grid. So we'll never hold the Bible higher than our ability to love, because Jesus is love. And so they throw out parts of the Bible, and I say, but he's really good at like food pantries, and he's really good with standing up for social injustice. And I look at my side, and I'm know the word, know the word, know the word. And I look at him, he's do the word, do the word, do the word. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, we both have some issues, and James is pointing that out today. There's certain ones of you that would rather do 18 Bible studies and others of you that would rather serve people every day of the week. And throughout history, let's just be honest, Christians have struggled with this. Even back in Jesus' day, you had different religious sects, and one side was the Pharisees, and the Pharisees knew the word, knew the word, knew the word. They were good, and they could recite, and they were obedient, but they were so self-righteous, they were so arrogant that they missed Jesus himself and their own external righteousness. And others, there's the Sadducees. And the Sadducees, they were Sadducee, because I learned that in Sunday school. Anyway, because they were so busy doing stuff and that they missed Jesus as well, and they didn't know the Bible, and they would disagree with even Jesus about some things. And the same thing happens today in our world. Our culture, we struggle with it as well. We have some more liberal churches that are great at doing the word, and some others that are more conservative that are good at knowing the word. But I want us to see, as James is trying to teach us here, that we have to do both. We have to know the word. And then when we get to a certain point, you do it, and then you know it, and you do it, and the second you let go of one side, the bike doesn't work right. And a lot of us are disappointed with bike when we should be learning, maybe not learning from bike, but we're disappointed with bike when we should be doing it properly. And we're disappointed with God when we're not really listening and allowing him to penetrate our hearts and teach us. And so James addresses this. If you're in James chapter 1, we're going to read through this, starting in verse 19 this week. And as I read this, I want you to think, do the word, know the word, do the word, know the word. I want you to think through that, and you can see where James is. He starts off with this, knowing the word. My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen. We have to listen to the word. We're going to be in trouble if we don't. Be slow to speak. Quit talking over it. Let it speak to you. Slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth. Do the word. So it's know the word, know the word, know the word. Now it's do the word. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that's so prevalent. And humbly accept the word, know the word, planted in you, which can save you. Do not merely listen to the word, which a lot of us, we do. Let's just spend, it's easier, isn't it? Just to listen and think we're doing it. It's just easier. And so it says, don't merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself goes away immediately and forgets what he looks like. But whoever looks intently, so you're actually taking the time to know and you're getting rid of the distractions to know, but whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it and does it, not just knows it and continues in it, does it, not forgetting what they have heard but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do. And we wonder why we're not receiving the blessings of knowing God. And sometimes it's as simple as we're so busy doing that we don't know. We're so busy knowing that we don't do. And we're just off. And then it says here, those who consider themselves religious but don't keep a tight rein on their tongues, those who know but don't do with their mouths, they deceive themselves and their religion's worthless. But also, religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, doing. Look after orphans and widows and their distress and keep oneself from being polluted by the world. So there's both. And I want us to see right here that some people think they're honoring the Lord because of how well they know the word, but their actions show differently. And I want to ask you today, do your actions show different than the reality of what God is trying to teach you? And in one side or the other, because let's be honest, we are all balancing this bike daily. And if ever we think we don't need the other side, we will miss honoring the Lord who has redeemed us and bought us. And so what he does is he gives us a correction. So let's go back to verse 19. I want to go through these verses a little more slowly right here. But the correction that he gives is an interesting one because our culture, what we like to do, he kind of corrects our personality. And what he does, he points out a personality flaw, which I often excuse in myself. Oh, yeah, that's just kind of my nature. I'm an external processor. So I do this, and I'm a little quiet, so I don't need to. And what he does here is he corrects this knowing-doing dichotomy that some of us have with a simple personality flaw challenge. And so verse 19, we're going to see the first personality that he addresses. And he says, "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen." And so the first personality type he points out is the poor listener. And so the first personality he points out is the poor listener, in case you didn't hear that earlier. You know the poor listener, don't you? You know this person. They're a little distracted. They're always looking off someone speaking to them. And they, oh, wait, yeah, yeah. And they're focused, and then all of a sudden they lose their focus. Maybe they're very distracted by the technology on their hands. Maybe they don't like the advice you're giving. So it's like, yeah, yeah, just keep talking. I'm just going to ignore you and do my own thing. One thing about the poor listener I hear is that sometimes the person will start giving the statement and then the poor listener will just kind of finish the sentence for them so that they'll shut up. I've never experienced that myself, but I hear that that's what happens. Maybe, and sometimes let's be honest, the poor listener is just simply stubborn. They hear the advice, I hear your words, I'm going to decide at a later date whether or not I'm going to agree with you. And so we all, if we're honest in and of ourselves, we all have this aspect to us of this first personality type that I don't know if you heard me say it. It's the poor listener. And all of us have a little point of that. And I want you to see that poor listening habits will get in the way of your relationship with others, but it'll also get in the way of your relationship with God. But the good news is, if you are poor at listening, you can improve. I want you to know that this is something that God's been working on me for like 30, 40 years or so, since I was at least a high schooler, that God just continues to just slap me every once in a while over this, because I still remember a time early on in ministry, and I was at a bigger church, and I was in the gym. I can remember the situation. I can even name the person that I was talking with. And this person was talking to me, but it was between services. And between services, there's a lot of people around. And I'm kind of an extrovert. I like to talk to people. And I was single at the time. And there's this really cute girl that was kind of in the gym as well. Her name was Sarah. And so I remember this lady talking to me, expressing her concerns with some things, and I knew what she was going to say, so I kind of was finishing her sentences in my head, and I remember just being kind of staring off and trying to, and my boss came up to me and really got on me, pulled me aside, "Stu, you've got to be better at this," and I heard what my boss was saying, and I knew the situation, and I immediately was like, "Yep, you're right, yeah, I know, I got it, I'm struggling with this, I know that, I'm working on it." I didn't even let him finish the sentence because I knew what he was going to say. That's the poor listener. And what James talks about when he talks about the poor listener, he gives the poor listener something that they need to work on, and it's this: be quick to listen. So if you are a poor listener here, you need to be quick to listen. Okay, what does that even mean? Quick to listen? I have no idea what you're talking about. Here's what I want to tell you. If you are a poor listener, I'll say this twice, slow down. Okay, slow down. Said it twice. Take your time to listen. What I mean by taking your time to listen, the speaker is going to speak at the same pace, however you're listening. But what you do is you slow down to take the time to actually hear. If you value the person who is talking, I want to challenge you for a few things. Number one, maybe it's make eye contact with them. Have you ever been talking with someone and they don't even make eye contact with you? You know they're tracking somewhere else or they're insecure or they're shy or whatever it is. I constantly have to challenge my kids, son, will you please look at them when they're talking? Because I'm hoping this will develop this habit of becoming a good listener. If you value who it is, I want to challenge you, put away the phone. Technology is getting in the way of our real communication. We think we're communicating with people, but we are actually becoming more poor at listening than we already are. And so at dinner time, will you put away your phone? When you're at lunch with another person, will you put away your phone a little bit? Will you allow yourself to focus on the listener? Will you allow yourself to hear the message that's being portrayed? Will you be quick to listen? Allow them to speak, because the relationship's the priority. Now, I know that husband and wife, we have a hard time with this because we're always with each other and we're always with our device, right? Can I challenge you to make time where you are away from it, both of you, particularly the one who is not as quick to listen? Relationship's the priority. Let's keep going with this, though. James is really talking about how this inability to be quick to listen affects our relationship with one another, but he's really going for this affects your religion. This affects your relationship with the Lord. Can we just be honest that our culture has more challenges to actually listening to the voice of the Lord than any culture that I could at least read about in history because of all the things that we have going on? We have so much information. We have so much affluence. We have so much opportunity. It takes us 30 minutes to even decide what we want to watch because we have so many choices. And so we don't even hear the voice of God. And I want to challenge you today, will you slow down? Will you slow down and listen to God? Because God oftentimes is speaking to you. You just haven't slowed down enough to listen. We need to quit looking for him in the thunderstorms. We need to quit looking to him in the loud trumpet. And we need to begin looking to him to speak in the gentle whisper. But we won't hear the whisper until we've slowed down. So put away the phone and your time with the Lord. Take time for the Lord. Turn off your radio every once in a while. Do some things that will allow you to truly listen and get rid of the distractions around you. But there's another barrier that we have to being quick to listen. And the second one is consider the heartbeat of the speaker. Let me say what I mean by that. Sometimes what we need to do is we need to focus on what is being said rather than how we feel about what's being said. Some of your fights that you're having with your friends, maybe if instead of you focusing on how you feel about what you said, you can actually focus on what is said. You might learn more. You might be able to increase the relationship. Our defensiveness and our self-justification gets in the way of the message a lot of times, doesn't it? So can I ask you, if you struggle with being quick to listen, are you being defensive? Are you justifying yourself? Are you paying attention to how you feel about what's being said rather than actually just listening to their heartbeat? I want you to see also, but the way that it's being said is important. If someone speaks to me and their tone is strong, they're sad when they're saying it, they're angry, they're whatever it might be, they're worried, can we listen to the emotions and more than just the words? Can we listen to the heartbeat of the person that's speaking rather than just hearing just plain old words? Because most of communication is nonverbal, but if we only focus on the verbal, we will be a poor listener. Know what fires them up. If they're angry, recognize this about the person who is saying it. This is the type of thing that fires them up. This is the type of thing that makes my wife sad. This is the type of thing that makes my child defensive and insecure. How can we speak to that? Because this is what we are trying to do, that my children don't know how to communicate perfectly, believe it or not. But what they do know how to do is they express their emotions really well. And if I can be quicker at listening, I might be able to meet their needs quicker. Now, again, this happens with God as well. can we consider the fact that God has some attributes that we don't understand? And that when God is a just God, he is angry, he is punishing, he is all these things that our culture says, well, we don't believe in that part of God, we like the love part. Can I just say that we need to understand God completely when he speaks? That sometimes we're so eager to do the word and not know the word because we don't understand the one who's speaking the word, and we're not really doing the word. We're adding Jesus's name, but we're not really doing it. And moderns, I love it when an atheist quotes the Bible to me and says, well, this is what the Bible says about this. Why aren't you doing it? And I'm like, you know, sometimes I need to be reprimanded by that. But sometimes I go, well, you don't even believe in the Bible. You're misquoting the heartbeat of God. You're misquoting the heartbeat of Jesus. Jesus meant a lot more than that. But we're never going to get there if we don't take the time to listen to God and listen to the heartbeat and the hard passage. Real quick side, if you're in a hard passage, you don't understand it. Why did God do this? Why is God saying this? You interpret the hard in light of the easy, in light of the big picture. Okay? I don't understand this attribute in this verse. Well, what's the big attribute that you understand? You begin to understand better, but you will only do that as you are quick to listen. Okay, let's keep going. Be quick to listen and be slow to speak. Now, do you know what this is? This is the over-talker. You know an over-talker. They always have to talk. They always have to fill the air. Their voice always needs to be heard. My opinion is always very important. I'm always the last one to speak. I'm always the first. And I might interrupt you here and there because, wait, you didn't understand. No one. And we just, you know people like this. They just talk. And I see some elbows going right now. That's counseling for later. But sometimes your kids are the last to leave church every week. You're always have an opinion about literally everything. You're frustrated with these people, and you make sure you let them know. And there's always the gossip going on. There's this going on. There's that going on. And I want to challenge us here, over talker, if you know one, because I'm sure you aren't. But if you know one, will you be slow to speak? Be slow to speak. Discipline yourself for silence. I struggle with this. I'm an external processor. I enjoy talking with my wife through issues. But there's certain times where I need to do that, and there's certain times where I just need to allow silence. Can I challenge you, over talkers, don't interrupt? Can I challenge you, don't take things personally and defend yourself? Just let them go. I think it's very important that we don't think it's all about us, that we can allow someone to process it. Don't take it personally. Don't defend yourself. Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord. That means recognize your blind spots. You know what? I need to hear that. I don't need to justify my ability to speak. I don't need to have the last word. I'll let them have the last word. This is being slow to speak. As I slow down my speech, as you slow down your speech, you're saying, you hypocrite, you're the pastor. You're preaching right now. Yes, I'm working on it. But as I slow down my speech, what I want you to hear is that my words become more valuable. When I use less of them, the ones I use are more valuable. And every one of you over-talkers understands, because you have someone around you that you allow into your life that is opposite of you. And you're like, yeah, when they speak, I actually listen. So I want to challenge you to listen to that yourself. Your words become more valuable the less you speak, and your words become less weaponized, okay? Let's learn to be slow to speak. Now, this is in our relationship with others, but I want to challenge us as well. The big picture where James is going with this, he wants you to be able to honor the Lord and grow in the Lord, and I want you to see that this hurts our relationship with God as well when we're over-talkers. When you pray, do you really communicate with God, or do you just do all the talking? Do you give him your Amazon wish list and then get mad that number three wasn't gotten, or do you actually have a conversation? Do you meditate on his word, or do you hope that he really meditates on yours? Right? Let's be honest. Sometimes we're so busy asking God to meditate on our words that we don't even hear the way he has already communicated to us and how the Holy Spirit wants to grow us up. Don't rush your time of reading. Don't rush your prayer time. Don't check it off. Spend time. Be slow to speak. How about this one? Can you trust God's timing? God has this weird way in my life of I will be praying for things and I will say, God, I'm going to pray about this. I really think that you want me to, and I'm listening to God in that area, but I really think that there's a page about to turn, school's about to end, the calendar's about to change, so I'm going to pray hard until this happens, and then, you know, March, as soon as March comes, then I'm going to pray about something else because I'm God, can you speak to me in this time? And God has this weird way of saying, letting the time that I gave him expire without speaking. And then I go, okay, Lord, you know where I am. Then I move on. And then he speaks very loudly. So sometimes we need to just allow God's timing. And sometimes we need to allow him to direct our paths and change our minds. There's certain things that we might lift up to God all the time, but we need to stop speaking enough that he is allowed to change our hearts, to change our path. Stop speaking. Be slow to speak if you're an overtalker. Let's keep going, though. So if this isn't convicting enough, he's got some more. Verse 19, again, be quick to listen, be slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. And I think it's interesting. It says, be slow to become angry because human anger doesn't do the same thing that God's anger does. So if you are a person that struggles with anger, I'm gonna label you the fast fuse, okay? So you know the types. Some of you, again, there's a lot of elbowing going on this morning. This is weird. But some of you, you're prone to anger. Maybe you get on social media and you get fired up. I wish there was this rule that we could like zap people's social media like privileges and just say, you're done. Like, not just people we know either, bigger people. Anyway, someone has a different political opinion than you. Someone has a different lifestyle than you. And they explode on social media and you can see the anger in them. And we get angry at another person and we listen to the news and we get angry about these things. You might be a fast fuse. If you walk into the room and the personality of the room changes for the negative, it gets quieter, people back up, people quit talking, you might have a fast fuse. Now, I do remember, and if you look at this passage, it says, human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. I taught on this a long time ago, and I remember after the sermon was over, two guys confronting me and saying, there's nothing wrong with anger. God gets angry. Anger's just fine. I think you're coming down too hard on this. And I would say that in Exodus 34:6 is actually the most quoted verse by other biblical writers in all of the Bible. And it says, basically it says, God is slow to anger. And other biblical writers quote this phrase from the Torah that God is slow to anger over and over again. So here's my challenge to you. If you tend towards anger, number one, do the things that anger God anger you? Or do you just get frustrated with people because they're idiots? I mean, and I think another side of that would be, does God get as angry and as quickly as you do? Because let's be honest, you have had your share of idiocy as well, right? Does he get angry as often as you? Does he get angry as quickly as you? Are your priorities in line with his? Does God have anger at injustice that's true injustice and you get mad that someone stole your parking space? So these are different levels right here. But I want you to see that God does get angry, but he's not at the level of almost exploding all the time, or else this world would be, we'd have some issues. We'd have a lot more rainbows in the sky after a lot more calamities. He's not at the edge of explosion. Anger often leads to sin, and oftentimes we justify our anger, and then we go a little bit too far because we're so used to our anger. And so fast fuse, how do you become slow to anger? Because that's your challenge. Be slow to anger. And I got a few words right here. Number one, recognize your own imperfections and your need for Jesus daily. Be quicker to give grace to others that you need yourselves. as we remind ourselves daily of the gospel, and the quick of the gospel is you and I were created for a relationship with God, but our sin has separated us from it. And because of that, we who are clothed in flesh, who still continually mess up, we have a gap. And we're not living the way we were created to live. And the only thing we deserve is separation from God and death. But Jesus Christ died on our behalf that we might have that saved, that we might be saved, that we might have a relationship with God again. So the only thing that you and I deserve naturally with God is hell, is death, is separation. And we, if we get angry at all the blessings that we have been given, we're doing a disservice to God. So forgive others daily. Remind yourself of your blessings daily. Remind yourself that the only thing you deserve is hell. Release your need to fix things. Parents, I want to challenge you today. Your kids are imperfect. Some of it they got from you, believe it or not. I don't know, I heard. But can we release the need to fix them all the time and instead release them to God, lead them well, discipline them well, but pray for them and allow the Holy Spirit to fix them? Can I say that in your spouse is imperfect? Release. Your roommate is imperfect. Release and allow God to fix them. That might help you be slower to anger. Some of you need to unplug from technology for a while. Be done with social media for a little bit. Quit looking at the news every night because it's making you angry, and the fruit of your anger is not healthy in your life. So maybe that's where you need to be. Others of you, we need to begin feeding our spiritual life more and more. Because let's be honest, I can feed my flesh or I can feed my spirit. I'd rather have spiritual fruit come out of my life. And the only way that's going to happen is if I feed my spirit. This is the same thing that happens with God. We can get angry with God. And if you're angry with him, can I tell you, will you talk with him about it? Will you just, I think God can take it. He gets it. He knows you. He understands you well. God, I've been angry with you for so long because of the scar in my past, because of the way I was treated by this person, because of the family I was given, because of this, because of that. I want to challenge you today to ask him. Just be honest with him and ask him to transform your thinking, and maybe that'll help release your anger because you've been given so much. Embrace it. Verse 21, therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word that's planted in you, which can save you. So what we have here is we have this fourth characteristic that some of us have that he's going to challenge us with. And what he's saying is here, he's saying, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that's so prevalent, both in you and around you, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves, do what it says. And this fourth type of a person right here is the relatively righteous hypocrite. The relatively righteous hypocrite. Okay, so this person right here is a pretty good person. They're moral. They go to church regularly. They're quick to compare themselves to others and say, well, at least I'm better than that guy. They think they deserve certain things. They don't really, they're not, haven't soaked in the gospel. The mental picture that I get is the drag queen story hour controversy, the ones that hold up the signs and talk about how evil these other people are. And I know none of us in this room are that, like, awful with our hypocrisy because, you know, we're all pretty righteous people compared to them. Oh, wait a second. The relatively righteous hypocrite. God says here, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that's so prevalent, and humbly accept the word that's planted in you. The chances are you have justified sins in your life. And we all do it naturally, don't we? We sit there at McDonald's, we got our double quarter pounder with cheese that we're eating, but we have a Diet Coke, so it's okay. And then we look at the guy outside taking a smoke break and we say, look at how, what awful thing he's doing to his body. I can't believe that they would do that. Oh, I can't believe they would support that political candidate when this one is so perfect. Hopefully none of us believe any of that. But what ends up happening is we have this relative righteousness. This lifestyle, at least I don't struggle with that. They're so awful. And we have this relative righteousness that we do, and we gossip about somebody. thinking that's okay because who we're gossiping about sinned worse than us while we're gossiping. And we justify our greed. We justify our wrath. We justify all these other things. And sure, I struggle with lust, but everyone does. At least I don't struggle with it like them because their lifestyle is a lustful lifestyle. When the whole time we're allowing ourselves a certain amount of lust. And he says, therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that's so prevalent. Because as long as we're covered in flesh, we're going to have evil that's prevalent. But as long as you act righteous and compare your righteousness to somebody else, you're going to miss out on the true righteousness of Jesus Christ. I need some of your righteousness, Jesus. I want you to cover this sin and that one, but I got it from here. And Jesus is saying, oh, you have no idea how separated you are from me naturally. I died to give you life, and not just a little bit, to give it to you abundantly. And humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Humbly admit that all of God's ways are right. So we're not the do the word, do the word, do the word. God, your word's wrong here. Can we? It's not very loving to do that. And he's like, no, it's not very loving to do that, what you're doing to me right now. Because I know how this world it works best, and you know what's best for that person. And I'm glad, I want you to love on them, but that's still a sin. And because there's consequences that really hurt them. So humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Do it and know it. Know the word, do the word, know the word, do the word. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Those who consider themselves religious yet do not keep a tight rein on their tongues deceive themselves, and their religion is worthless. He's saying, yes, you say you know the word, but you're not doing it at all. Religion that our God the Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after the ones that can't take care of themselves in this culture. That would be widows and orphans, and they're distressed. Know the word, do the word, know the word, do the word. But it also says, and keep oneself from being polluted by the world. So it's not, well, I'm helping the homeless people, so therefore I'm going to go out and get wasted every night. I'm justifying it. We can both struggle, the know the word and the do the word, can both struggle with relative righteousness. And the point of this is, the cure to the relative righteous hypocrite is this: consistently remember the whole gospel. The whole thing. You deserve separation from God, and you deserve hell and death, but you've been given life, an abundant life. And remember that while doing the word. So keep pedaling with both feet. Illustration that I just simply would give is one that I've given before and I've heard it before, but it's so applicable here. There's a lot of, if I was to tell my kids, hey guys, I'm preaching 2 services today, so can you please, when I get home, please make sure that when I get home, your room is clean. That's all I need from you. Just clean your room. And if I, in about 45 minutes, get home and I walk in the door and I see my kids, I give them a hug because I love them. They love me. They come running to me faster than the dog. Anyway, and so they come running down, hey, Daddy. And I say, hey, did you clean your room? That was the only thing I asked of you. And they say, Dad, well, let's talk the cleaning thing. Here's what I found out about cleaning the room. I can say it in Greek. I've studied in 3 languages. Actually, there's 3 theories that I've learned about since you, in the last hour, I've learned 3 different theories on cleaning room. There's this theory and that theory. I saw a YouTube tutorial on different methods of cleaning rooms. So I've learned so much about cleaning the room, Dad. Aren't you proud of me? What am I going to say? Did you stink and clean the room? That's all I want. And well, yeah, we signed up for this webinar, so we're going to learn more about cleaning the room. And you know what? We're teaching people the importance of cleaning the room in cultures that don't have rooms like we have. So we're learning this, and we're going to become so good. I just want to know if you stink and clean the room, because that's what we were asked. That's what was asked of you. And I think sometimes what we do is we get so caught up in knowing about honoring God that we forget to honor God. So busy knowing the word that we forget to do the word, and then we get out of whack, and then we get disappointed with bike, right? And so as I close, I'll have the worship team come forward right now. I want to challenge us as a church. Can we be a church as imperfect as we are, that knows the word well, and we hold the authority of Scripture highly, but we also do the word well. When we talk about our community groups, we have challenged you as community groups, and I hope that you will talk about this. I don't want you meeting every week, doing your Bible study every week. I want you meeting, but once a month, can you serve together so that you don't get so fat and happy that you're learning so much, you're knowing the word, that you're not doing it as well, because there's a balance there. I hope that you're not involved in so many Bible studies that you don't know any non-believers. I hope that you're not so involved in your own righteousness that you're missing Jesus's. We must, as a church, know the word and do the word. Know the word and do the word. And as we do this together and wrestle through it, because you might go on this side and I might naturally go on this side, as we do this, may we allow the Lord to transform us to be people that fully know him. I'm going to close in prayer.